This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Trevor Chappell.
One of the things that I read the other day is that there's a report that's been just brought out and talk about how it's important for children to be taught how to not only fact check but to recognise fake news. Is that important?
Oh, of course it's very, very important. One of the things that we find in fact-checking research is that people are sharing material without knowing that it's false, without even thinking about whether they need to check whether it's false. So the best way to get people to care about sharing accurate information on social media websites is to get them to give them a bit of media literacy skills and to give them some critical analysis skills, critical thinking skills. And the best place to do that is right at the start of their education. So at school, you teach children how to understand whether the information they're getting is accurate or not.
And within that, is it good for children to be just taking a look at what's in the media critically anyway, whether or not it's seeing if it's fake news, but just being critical of what they see?
Of course, of course. You know, I mean, I have lots of conversations with my kids about what's in the media because we've got radios on and news on all the time. That's our sort of household. And so you want kids to be understanding. You want people, adults, to understand that information that comes to them can be, you know, valuable or not valuable. So we need to teach those skills very early. Look, I was going through my kid's room a couple of weeks ago, and I came across a bookmark that he'd made at school. And it was this sort of, it was a green bookmark, and it said, what is the difference between facts and opinion? And then it defined what fact was, and it defined what opinion was, and the difference between the two. And I thought, oh, this is fantastic, and this is pretty good. And I went to my son, and I said, oh, so what did you talk about this? And he told me about the lesson that they'd done about understanding the difference between those two things. And I thought, this is fantastic. He's seven. And they're teaching the difference between fact and opinion at school at that age. And I thought that was a wonderful thing. I was very pleased about that.
And there's not only that, but it means that they'll also be, they'll take a look at things in history. They'll take a look at everything that they learn under a critical eye as well, which is a good thing.
Oh, it is. Look, if we say that we base our democracy on people being informed and educated and understanding that they're making decisions based on informed opinions, then that is a wonderful thing to teach children to understand what a valuable and credible source is if they're making those sorts of decisions.
I want to talk a little bit about the reporting that there've been as far as disasters and natural disasters occurring at the moment. Gordon, have you had a look at that and what are your thoughts?
Well, I did have a bit of a look at it, and especially at the after the hurricanes, the two major hurricanes are in the US. Unfortunately, in the wake of those sorts of events, there are people who are determined to get false information out there to either to prank people or to mislead them for some other sorts of reason or even for partisan political reasons. We see the usual footage of a photo of a shark swimming in a suburban street because they're, you know, an area is flooded in the middle of a hurricane, or alligators, you know, turning up in places that they shouldn't be, all that sort of stuff. But we also saw stuff in the wake of Hurricane Irma. At one point, someone had posted an old video of a huge storm developing in, I think it was old footage from Canada, and they had it on a four-hour loop, and they had people watching this live on the internet, thinking they were watching the development of the hurricane Irma, and they had advertising all around that, so they were trying to make money out of that, and a whole bunch of other bits and pieces popped up around the place too. Like, there was a photo of a flooded airport and some video of a flooded airport, and both of those were shared by Donald Trump's, the White House's social media advisor. And very quickly after he shared that, you know, they were basically saying, oh, we're thinking of the people at the Miami airport, you know, this is what they're going through at the moment. Miami airport tweeted out a moment ago later and said, that footage, that photo, not from Miami airport. And it turned out one was from Mexico last week because there was a hurricane through there just the week before, and the other one was a photo. It was an artist's representation of what LaGuardia Airport in New York would look like if sea levels rose to certain levels because of climate change. And someone had just posted that photo of these airplanes in a big, looked like a big sea or a big lake, just with their tails, these airplanes' tails sticking out of the this big ocean of water. And that was being posted as though it was from Miami.
So is this for a number of reasons? Because, number one, they're wanting clicks on the internet, so they're posting pictures that will bring people to them so they'll click on it.
Yeah, well, that's part of it. People can make money out of that sort of thing, and that is one of the motivations of spreading misinformation. We know that from research. But there are also partisan motivations as well. I saw one posts that have been shared quite a few, many times, of a photo of people who are protesting, you know, the Black Lives Matter protest movement. There were people protesting in Texas a few, I think it was last year, and they'd stopped a highway and they had blocked people from, they were trying to disrupt traffic, and they had a big line across this highway of people linking arms with posters saying Black Lives Matter. That photo was reposted recently, and it was claimed that those people holding the Black Lives Matter placards were trying to stop emergency services people from coming into Miami to help people affected by the hurricane. Now, that's just that's misappropriated content. So the content was real. It was a protest from the Black Lives Matter movement, but it wasn't a bunch of people in support of that cause blocking emergency services people trying to come and help those being affected by a hurricane. That's a partisan political motivation.
See, Gordon, the thing with that is that unless you know and unless you do a whole lot of background digging, you would go with that story and believe that that was true.
Well, if you didn't have the reason to believe that it's not true, you might.
Yep.
And you might automatically think it's true. If your political views lean slightly in that direction, you're not going to question it. But it actually isn't that hard to debunk something like that. There are some very, very basic tools that we call reverse image search tools. And Google has one just built into its own web browsers. There's another one called TinEye. There's another one called reverse image search. All you need to do is click on a photo, pull it into this little web box on these with these programs, and it will find the original of that photo. It'll tell you when that photo has been published in the past. And you'll be able to see that it wasn't taken just a couple of days ago or that day. You can see that it was last published in 2005 or first published in 2011. It's not that hard to check this sort of stuff. You just have to want to check it, to care the information that you're sharing or the information that you're taking in, assuming it's true, is actually true. It's not hard to do that.
We've seen a lot of media organisations with funding cuts, especially with newspapers, and we don't tend to have the same number of photographers anymore. So there's another issue within the media that we're seeing an awful lot of file photos being used because they can't get an appropriate photo?
I don't know that mainstream media organisations are just lifting old photos and reusing them, repurposing them, saying that they're something that they're not. These are individuals. These are citizens, I'll call them citizens, who are just putting information on the internet for whatever their motivation is, whether it is to make a little bit of money on a website or to prank, as I said, or, you know, those sharks swimming around suburban areas, or to make a political point that suits them. I don't think we can blame the lack of photographers and media rooms that are suffering from resource shortfalls from doing that sort of stuff.
Or maybe organisations like news organisations using photos that perhaps they shouldn't be, maybe more of an issue within those organisations.
Yeah, perhaps it is.
Carolyn, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, okay. Carolyn.
We get far, far too much repeat of drama and incidental news and trauma that we do not need. I'm 87 and I use the wireless a lot at night time. And every half hour I'm told about the dreadful things that are happening, and there's nothing other than your program where we can sit just lie and listen. But this goes on all day long and all night long. When we have the drum, they have all the thing splathered with an enormous amount of bad colour, which hurts our eyes. It's amazing the amount of colour that's done behind the news and the flashes and the dots and dashes, which we do not need.
Carolyn, one of the things about news at the moment is that news organisations are putting out more and more and more news, and there's almost a belief that there is a desire by the community to be receiving more and more news. Does that pay out, though, Gordon? Because we see a heck of a lot of news services. It's really, news starts at 4 o'clock on a lot of television stations. We have news on the hour and sometimes on the half hour on the radio. Is there a thirst for news, or is there a belief that there's a thirst for news?
Well, I think there's a thirst for news among some people. But there's also the sense that news organisations feel that people need to be informed all the time. I mean, it's up to us. We can switch off. Of course we can switch off. But the nature of the news that's out there can be quite depressing if you immerse yourself in it too much for too long. We find at RMIT that our students in the first year of the journalism program, we ask them to immerse themselves a lot in news. And after a couple of months, and you think that those journalism students, you know, they'd be interested in the news, and they are, of course, but we ask them to really immerse themselves in it. And we find that after a few months of it, some of them start to feel quite down, and we suggest that they take a break from it for a bit. Because the nature of news is that it's about drama and conflict and sometimes the darker underbelly of the world as well. People need to know this sort of stuff, but to immerse yourself in it all the time can be quite debilitating or can be quite depressing.
God, is it cheap to make? Can they, because we see so many news services on telly, once the news has been generated, is it cheap to be able to broadcast?
Do you mean legitimate news or fake news?
Legitimate news. Well,
I don't think legitimate news is good quality news takes time, it takes resources, it takes research, it takes the skill sets of journalists. If you make some news, you want to be using it a lot, I guess, and maybe that's why they sort of plaster our tech platforms with it, radio, TV, internet. So you are going to get as much out of your dollar for producing that sort of stuff as you can. I asked whether you were talking about fake news, because fake news is incredibly cheap to make. It's quick and easy and cheap to make. And it's really cheap to misinform people, but it's really expensive to correct that misinformation for journalism organisations, for media organisations to do the research to debunk misinformation. Takes time and is a lot harder to get to the people who heard the misinformation in the first place. We know this from research.
The reason I ask is because, as I said, we have some TV stations have news at 4, news at 5, news at 6.
Yeah.
And perhaps within those programs, there isn't necessarily that much news generated, but there's a heck of a lot of time filled in between the news that's generated.
Although, yeah, that's true. And once once you've made it, you want to get it out there as often as possible. So because it's expensive to make news, you hear the same news again and again in those news reports.
With the reporting, especially of the national the disasters that we've seen, very different reporting of the disasters that we're seeing in America, the natural disasters, in comparison to what was coming out of Asia.
Yes.
Now, what's the reason behind that?
Oh, look, there's an old formula in media organisations around the world. Things are much more important if they happen to people who live in your local area, in your backyard, than they are if they live halfway across the world. And if you identify with people, that news and the things that are happening to them in a disaster feel more important as well. So a hurricane in Miami feels more important, the impact on those people's lives feels more important to us than the recent floods in Bangladesh, for example, which killed tens of thousands of people. We just don't hear about those sorts of things. And it's an unfortunate thing. We report more about people that we identify with than we do with others. And we identify very closely with Americans because we're part of that whole cultural mix. We're exposed to their culture all the time through television and film. And we identify as part of that group.
As media organisations, though, you would think that there's a responsibility to accurately reflect what's happening. And also, given that the Asian region is far closer to us because we are actually in Asia.
Absolutely. A moral responsibility to report about things that are affecting people on such a broad scale. Absolutely. Is the media always morally responsible? Not always. The sorts of media organisations that will air those sorts of stories are organisations such as the ABC and SBS. And you'll note there's not the same sort of commercial imperative for those media organisations to cover news in the same way as there is for commercial organisations. People turn off certain types of news. People turn off if they're being told stuff about subjects that they're simply not interested in or that bore them. We know that media organisations, commercial media organisations in Australia, often find it very difficult to hold an audience if they put political news in their news bulletins or if they cover that subject in current affairs programs. And if you're going to be covering death and disaster that's happening in a foreign country to people that your audience doesn't really, and this is terrible to say, but really don't care that much about, then you're not going to get an audience. You're going to get them turning off. And it's purely a commercial consideration. So, in a way, ethics and morality doesn't really come into it, unfortunately.
Was it even more striking with this in that we probably heard more about the cricket in Bangladesh than we did about the floods?
Yeah, absolutely. When I watched the cricket in Bangladesh, against the Bangladeshis, yes, and it was disappointed to lose the first test, but it is odd that we hear more about our cricket team over there than we did about the tens of thousands of people who died in the floods.
Audrey, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes.
Trevor, first of all, I'd like to say that I've been listening to your program for years, and this is the first time I've ever phoned in.
Good on you.
And the reason I'm doing this is because when you signed off last week, you sounded very wistful when you said that your team, the Eagles, was playing, and you didn't sound as though you were very hopeful about it. And I can relate to that, of course, because I barrack for the Bombers.
Oh, okay.
So, and then, of course, I thought, okay, so I tipped it in my footy tipping, and they won.
Good. Well, I hope that you will do some tipping for us this week as well.
Yeah, but that's not really what I'm calling. I'm just sick to death of this cross-promotion. I mean, I know every letter in that Gruen and transfer thing. It's driving me mad.
This is cross-promotion within the ABC.
Yes.
Of course, because we don't advertise, we promote.
Well, yes, I know. that's what you call, That's not fake news, that's fake advertising.
It's true. That's something that for people who watch television and listen to the radio for that matter as well, it's something that media organisations feel that they need to do a lot is to cross-promote.
Now, of course. I mean, you've got an audience for something that's popular, you use that opportunity to push whatever other program you've got to get an audience for those programs as well. I mean, everyone does it. Some people do it in different ways. I mean, the ABC does it a lot with its own programming. I mean, just before I came on here this morning, I heard you promoting the podcast about that cold case crime murder. Yep. That happened in Melbourne. I don't know how many times I've heard that podcast, and that's across all times of day. I mean, that was at, 4:15 in the morning? I've heard it at 10 o'clock at night. I've heard it at 9 o'clock in the morning and midday. So
we're big on that.
Why an organisation does that.
We're big on that one at the moment.
It's a good podcast. I've listened to the whole thing. It's fantastic.
It is very good. I've got a text here that says, media is 95% left-wing. This is probably going to have a crack at the ABC. Shortens dealings as unions and major officials and part of Parliament question time, yet hardly mentioned in the media, instead reporting on Turnbull holding a baby with beer in their hands. ABC is the worst for bias, which I was sort of expecting that at the end. Interesting, the point, though, to be made that 95% of the media is left-wing.
Yeah, I find that extraordinary. It's not. I don't think it is anyway. No, we've talked before about how your own political views colour your view of the performance of various media organisations as well. So if you're a little bit right, you think most organisations are to the left. If you're a little to the left, you think there are a whole lot of right-wing organisations out there. You'll focus on the news cause of the world. Rupert Murdoch's impact.
What I think is interesting within that, though, is there's a consideration that if you talk about a certain type of story, then it is considered to be left or right wing. And I wonder whether or not those stories are in themselves left or right wing, but just stories.
Well, you could argue that there are certain issues that the left wants us to hear more about and that the right wants us to hear more about and wants to suppress stories that they're not interested in as well. I mean, different political groups have different agendas. So I guess, in a way, you can argue that certain stories are more left or more right because they feed into the concerns of those groups. So I don't think that's an unfair thing to say.
No, but I think there are political... But I think that we're forced into believing that they're left and right issues because political parties want us to believe that they are.
Oh, yeah, quite often. That's right. Of course they do. And it's easy to... I mean, they want to differentiate themselves from their opponents, so they seize particular issues and make them their own and say that this is a left and right issue, but many issues aren't so easily split down the middle in that way anymore.
Yeah, because I wonder whether or not people who are either left or right-leaning politically might say, well, no, actually, I don't agree with you, but, I mean, I consider myself to vote for this political party, but I actually don't agree with you. It's an issue. That's not the way I think.
Yep.
Bernie, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, Bernie.
How are you, Trevor?
I'm well.
Just to let you know, I've got a radio in the lounge room, one in the bedroom, one in the kitchen, One on the John and one in the shed, so I never miss anything when I walk through a house.
Good.
Anyway, what I'm trying to say is about the news. When we go to the movies with Mum and Dad or by ourselves, we saw a trailer first with world news or local news on in the movie. We didn't have any TV movie.
It's that's where you got your news.
That's where we got the news, in the cinema.
Yeah.
Before you watched the movie, you saw the world news.
And that was back when there were newsreels, and we've come a little bit further since then. But that was really a form of putting out propaganda. There was a heck of a lot of propaganda that was brought out through cinema news as well, and those at that time, Gordon.
Oh, there sure was. And you know what? As I was listening to that, I remembered one of my earliest memories. I'm old enough to remember going to the movies with my parents when I was very, very young and seeing a newsreel before a film, and it was about Australian troops in Vietnam, still fighting the Vietnam War. So this would have been the late 60s, mid to late 60s. Yes, I'm that old. And looking back at the sort of newsreels, the old movie-tone newsreels with those British accents about what was happening in Washington, what was happening in London, had a very much a propaganda feel to it, absolutely.
One of the perennial fake news stories that came back again over the last couple of weeks was the spotting of Tasmanian tigers. It seems that these ones come around every now and then.
Yeah, is this fake news or is this a group of people who genuinely believe they're on the trail of a mystery and they're solving this mystery, the mystery of whether the thylacine is still alive after 70-odd years since the last one died in captivity? I don't know whether it's fake news. I mean, it depends how it's being reported. The evidence is dodgy. I mean, all the images of these creatures that we're meant to believe might be Tasmanian tigers are always very blurry. And I saw a very funny news story. It was a parody story, a news parody story. I think it was on the Shuffle website, one of my favourite parody websites, basically saying that scientists have confirmed that the Tasmanian tiger is actually blurry in real life. The creature is blurry. Confirmed that.
But it's incredible how the media loves to pick up on those stories and make them into big stories.
Well, it's one of those unique interest stories, isn't it? I mean, is the Tasmanian devil alive or not? Is a tiger alive or not? That's something that's been around for a long, long time. And every time there's a sighting, someone purports to have evidence. I mean, there are academics who research this, so there is interest out there, and it's sort of it feels like it's a bit of an iconic Australian tale, isn't it? About we feel a bit guilty about having driven them to extinction, so if there are a few out there, then there'll be a lot of interest in the fact that there is.
I sort of want them to exist now.
Oh, so do I, but I don't know that they are.
I don't know if they do, but I really want them to now.
Yeah. But those reports come from all over the country as well. It's not just Tasmania. It's in the forests of Victoria and southwest South Australia. People are reporting this all over the place. People seem to see them everywhere.
Rob, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Trevor and guests. Yeah, just out and about cleaning at the moment. But with commercial TV networks news, particularly when I see them of an evening, 6 o'clock news, how they cram through the stories one after the other, the presenter puts through, you just can't keep up with it. It goes from one story to the next. You're trying to ascertain what they're saying, and they're on to the next story. It's so quick. I know they've got to push them through because of their ads, but unlike the ABC, when you watch the 7 o'clock news, it's nice and slow and you can understand it. It's a terrible thing.
Rob, does it annoy you with the news service that there isn't very much analysis or you only get, like, one side of a story?
Well, of course, there's not much analysis. It's quick. You only seem to get one side of the story, and then I flick over to the ABC at 7 o'clock, and it gives you a lot more understanding of the story. It presents it in a mannerly slower fashion, but with the commercial, they just churn them out.
Oh, that's because we're much better, Rob. That's what it is.
Okay, I agree with you. But we'll do an advert for you now.
Yeah, fair enough.
But my wife as well, she goes, well, did you catch that story. And I said, no, it's just flicked over to the next one. And it's just a standard fare from the commercial TV networks.
Gordon, do they have a format for how many stories that they want to get done in a news service on commercial television?
I don't know if they've got a format of how many they want to get through, but I do think they have a formula on length of time that a story should be. I mean, it is a sad fact that we have shorter attention spans than ever. And if you spend too much time and as a news organisation covering something, people do start to switch off. And I think a lot of those new services, Rod's right, it feels like you're just getting a scrolling bunch of headlines rather than real stories with real information in them. But the difficult thing, I think, or the sad thing about that as well, though, is that a lot of people think that because they've heard that headline, and this goes for scanning information online as well. If you go to a website and you just look at the headline and see the first line of a story, you think you know what the story's about. You think you understand that. You feel that you're informed, whereas you're not. You don't get the longer critical analysis stuff that you do get on, I'll speak the ABC as well, on the ABC and similar news organisations. And I think it's a sad thing that people think that they're well informed just from here looking at the headline and seeing the first line of something, rather than wanting to engage more deeply in an issue. And I'm sure that people are going out into the world and having arguments with people at work and elsewhere, saying, feeling as though they're informed about an issue based on those rolling headlines, and they really aren't. And that sort of doesn't really add to the value of public debate about issues.
Good morning, Carol.
Oh, good morning. I guess this might be slightly off the topic, but it's a wonderful opportunity for me to comment that I feel that the standard of pronunciation, spelling and grammar have really deteriorated in ABC news over the years. And I'll just give you a couple of examples.
Just very quickly, when you say spelling, what do you mean taking a look at news online?
Well, news online, for example, I recently saw Port Hedland, which is an important town and well known, and Hedland was spelt with two A's in it, Port Hedland. And I heard a news story on the radio, and it was after that big world leaders meeting in Hamburg, and the readers said, and this stopped me in my tracks. I had to think about it. They said a communique was issued, and they really meant a communique. And things like the wrong use of less versus fewer.
Carol, can I just ask you that with communique, that might have just been a fumbling over the word, not necessarily an issue to do with mispronunciation.
I don't think so, because communique... That's French diplomacy, it's quite a common word, in after you have a big meeting, a communique will be issued. But apart from that, I'd also like to comment that I think there's too much, not on the ABC, I guess, but there's so much reporting of celebrity issues that we're not interested in. We really want to know what's happening in Parliament and how our politicians are working to improve Australia.
Carol, thank you. I'm going to move on. A few issues there. I know with the ABC has SCOS, where they take a very close look at pronunciation and the importance of us to pronunciate properly, Gordon.
Yes, we all need to pronunciate properly. Yes, SCOS, I think, was resurrected a couple of years ago. It shut down that unit. Stand for SCOS is what the Standing Committee on Spoken English.
Yes,
and it's sort of a group within the ABC or an arm of the ABC that standardises how things are referred to and how things are pronounced in various arms of the ABC. Look, I do think it's very important that we use language correctly, and I jump on students who don't do that. I jump on my kids when they don't do that as well. I'm always correcting their grammar, and they feel I'm a bit of a pedant, a really annoying pedant around the house, but. Clarity of language is important if you want to clarify, if you want to, and I'm not doing it right now, if you want to express ideas clearly.
Yeah. Carol, thank you. Huts?
Yeah, how you going?
Yes, Huts.
My biggest whinge at the moment is when the TV media switched to a live press conference with the politicians and stuff. They've only got a microphone on the poly, and you don't hear the questions that are being asked by the journalists. So you've got no context as to what the answer's in, or even if they're even answering the question.
Hutz, that's a really good point. And Gordon, the thing is that those press conferences aren't made to be broadcast live. They're there for journalists to actually report on.
Yeah, that's right. There aren't microphones all over the audience. The audience being the media standing there. I mean, I've been to quite a few summits and panel discussions recently that has an audience, and we always have to wait 30 seconds when it comes to question time for someone to get a microphone to the person who's asking the question, who wants to ask the question, so that everyone can hear that question. And look, answers without context can be virtually useless. It is very important that we hear the question, and perhaps as we do get more of these sorts of live events, live press conferences going to air, people become more aware of that, and there's some better technology to pick up those questions.
Because if people can realise, there's a whole stack of journalists with their notebooks, who basically more print journalists are looking for grabs. So they're writing down, and so it's important that the person they're speaking to can hear the question, but not necessarily the public.
Yeah, that's right. You know, they don't have the phones in their hands. They might not even be recording it. They've got full paper, scribbling down the responses they're getting. But the media organisations that have the vision there, the cameras, will have a microphone next to their reporter, so that when they ask that question, they can get the question and the answer for the radio grab or for the TV grab. But you don't get those questions when it's coming from another media organisation halfway across the room.
Yeah, it's not. And if they're going to set those up as being, I mean, that's more of an issue to do with production. If they're going to set these things up to go live, then set up the appropriate microphones so that people can hear and understand what's going on.
Yeah, and when that's sort of set up in the press room, it will be easy to hear those questions if you're in a confined space. But quite often they're holding these press conferences out in the open or at a factory somewhere, and there's machinery going on in the background as well. You've got the Prime Minister standing there in a hard hat and you can't hear the questions he's being asked.
Let's go back to some calls. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Trevor. I used to be a news junkie, but I have to say I'm over it just because there's so much. And one of the things that really turns me off is when, say, just as an example, a terrorist attack in London, and the news media covers it for 8 hours and just squeezes every inch out of it, which is what the terrorists want, of course. But just too much information coming and too trivial. It trivialises the whole thing.
This comes down to you feel the need to be covering something for a long period of time, so then what ends up happening is that they run out of content and they're needing to do things over and over again, or just look for too many comments from too many places, Tony.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's. We see an awful lot of going live or extending coverage for things, Gordon, because there's a feeling you want to be the first and you're wanting to be covering something better than others.
Yeah, and there's an assumption that everybody is interested in that news event because it's dramatic and people have been killed or some other angle to it that's exciting and dramatic. There is an assumption that people want to know about it, so they stick with that story. But, you know, I agree with Tony. It's annoying when you see a news organisation trying to squeeze every last bit of information out of an event like that, but it's also really annoying when they're trying to get experts to analyse what's happening before we know everything about that event. And journalism shouldn't be doing that. Journalism should be collecting the facts and presenting them as they know it and considering them in a considered way, you know, taking time to understand what's going on rather than jumping to conclusions or speculating before we know everything about that event.
And you know it's gone too far when you have journalists reporting on the number of journalists that are there.
Yeah, and how often do you see that? I've seen so many photos of, you know, packs of journalists at an event where that's the only thing that they can now report on. Everything else about it has been reported. And we saw that with the Pell,
yes.
Pell court appearance a couple of months ago. You know, how many stories did we see about the pack of journalists following the Archbishop down the road?
It's sad, isn't it? John, good morning.
Good morning. My question is this. When did the editor, and once upon a time it was the editor that used to cut through a lot of the garbage that was in being spewed by politicians or whatever, and you would read that to get to the nuts or the nub of the story, when did the editor morph into what we've now got on media commentators who seem to take a particular view without any logical eyes? I'm wondering what Gordon's view on that is. I'm extremely disappointed that we no longer seem to have the journalists out there in lead positions, cutting through a lot of the rubbish and just giving us a detailed analysis of the facts behind a particular issue.
So are you feeling you're getting more comment than you are actual story, John?
Well, more comment than analysis.
Yes, and whether or not that's what you feel, that that's the editor's issue.
Well, once upon a time, you could cut into the editor. You would read the editor's column. If you were reading a paper, the editor would normally cut through to the chase. But nowadays, you don't seem to have editors. We have a lot of commentators.
Yeah, this is more in newspapers, Gordon.
I couldn't quite get what was being said there. The line was really bad.
What he's talking about is that in newspapers we see an awful lot of comment and not necessarily news. And also there was a special role for the editor's comment within the editorial from the editor within the papers, and that's also become more comment-based and not necessarily cutting through the jargon.
Yeah, well, we do still see editorials, as we call them, or the op-ed, opposite the editorials, those opinion pieces. There used to be a special place in a newspaper reserved for that. But with the advent of the internet and sort of online news, it's harder to see the hierarchy of information and of stories in news reporting these days. If you open a physical newspaper, you can go to the editorial and see what's being said there. But online, it's sort of all a bit of a mishmash. And I think that's part of the reason that we are seeing a lot more opinion throughout news stories in a media organisation than we do just pure news. And also because of the rise of the blogger. You know, we have, everyone's a publisher these days, everyone can have their opinion out there, and your average blogger doesn't necessarily stick to the rules of pure, straightforward reporting. It's all about opinion. The whole purpose of it is to get opinion out there. So opinion really is leaking into the news media generally because of that sort of thing.
Gordon, it's been a pleasure talking to you, as always, this morning. We look forward to having a chat with you again soon.
Fantastic. Let's do it.
Gordon Farah joining us, a former journalist and investigator with the RMIT Fact Check Unit.